does seem like there's incrementally development in that area. So a lot of that good habitat is slowly being impacted by the roads and residential development.
The Environmental Protection Agency takes action against a Haines landowner, and 20 Skagway students are on their way to tropical paradise. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. Those stories and more up next. An avalanche shut down part of the Klondike Highway Thursday, but caused no injuries. Crews with dump trucks and front-end loaders cleared debris from the road after the slide occurred around 2:30 p.m. on the 15th, south of the Captain William Moore Bridge. The Environmental Protection Agency has ordered a Haines landowner to restore altered salmon habitat on his property. Inspectors first visited the property of Bob and Nancy Loomis on the Haines Highway last summer, finding several questionable man-made developments affecting a salmon-bearing stream there. This week, EPA ordered Loomis to return the land to its natural state by September. Mark Jen is an inspector with EPA's wetlands program and was on site for the property examination.
Well, unfortunately, Mr. Loomis did not submit a permit application to Corps of Engineers prior to doing the unauthorized work in wetlands. And we sort of discovered this after the fact. And, when the Corps of Engineers did issue a notice of violation to Mr. Loomis, he continued to place fill material on his property in the wetlands there.
The property, located at 2.5 mile Haines Highway, is of particular interest to agencies like EPA or Alaska Department of Fish and Game because of its valuable fish-rearing habitat.
Well, primarily because it's got a really good high-value fish and wildlife habitat. I mean, a lot of the wetlands provide a lot of good habitat value for rearing juvenile coho salmon and cutthroat trout, Dolly Varden, and it drains the Mitchell Cat River. And looking at the aerial photographs of the landscape, I mean, it does seem like there's incrementally development in that area. So a lot of that good habitat is slowly being impacted by the roads and residential development. That any development that we do see there, that we want to make sure it adequately avoids and minimizes impacts to wetlands and habitat for fish and wildlife.
The Corps of Engineers originally notified EPA of the possible violations since they handle wetlands permitting for construction projects. They received the details from Fish and Game, which reported its discoveries several years ago.
And in addition to the wetlands violation, we also determined there were some stormwater violations as well. Under the stormwater requirements, he needed to submit a notice of intent to be covered under the construction general permit to discharge stormwater, as well as develop a stormwater pollution prevention plan and then implement that plan so that when he is doing any sort of construction work, the side slopes are stabilized, he's including erosion control measures and best management practices so that it minimizes any sort of stormwater runoff that could inadvertently place sediments into the wetlands and the adjacent salmon-bearing stream.
A fish habitat permit is required by Fish and Game for any in-water structures or work in salmon-bearing streams, and the Corps of Engineers issues permits for any discharge of fill materials into certain waters under the Clean Water Act.
And in terms of jurisdiction-wise, the Corps referred this case to us because EPA typically is the lead on wetland violations that were never permitted. So there was never a 404 wetland permit received for the work that was done on Mr. Loomis's property.
As property owners, the Loomises do have a right to develop their land. However, EPA says this was not the way to do it.
In terms of property ownership, property rights, I'm not saying that they cannot develop other property. I'm just saying that in this case, because there is wetlands and important resource values of that area, they needed to obtain the permits from the state and the federal government before undergoing any construction activities.
There's protocol for property owners to obtain permits for development, and Jen says following that process would probably end up saving resistant landowners time and money in the long run. Borough governments have more information about required permits at the state and federal level.
An issue that we did raise to Mr. Loomis was that he really didn't have a purpose and need for that fill. And typically when property owners submit permit applications, there's a purpose and need for why they put that fill there. And in discussions with Mr. Loomis, he couldn't tell us what his purpose and need was. except to tell us that, in the past years he's been receiving free fill material from the local contractors doing various projects in Haines.
EPA will handle the violations of unauthorized wetlands fill and stormwater discharge, but the state still has jurisdiction to resolve other unauthorized activities, Jen says. EPA has ordered the Loomises to safely remedy the violations by September 1st of this year and to comply with stormwater requirements within a month.
However, some of the work that we want Mr. Loomis to do in the salmon bearing stream, we will definitely have to coordinate with Fish and Game regarding proper methods to remove the culvert, remove the fill in that salmon stream. What are some of the timing windows in which he would not be able to work in the stream to minimize impacts to salmon in the area? So we'll have to do that coordination with the state. In terms of the unauthorized fill work in wetlands, we're asking him to remove unauthorized fill material in the wetlands, also to remove the culvert in the salmon bearing stream as well. And prior to having him remove that fill, we want him to provide us with a fill removal and restoration plan so that we can review it to make sure that it complies with other requirements.
The Clean Water Act authorizes civil penalties of up to $37,500 per day and other penalties of up to $16,000 a day for each violation. But without an office in Haines, enforcement could be challenging for the Environmental Protection Agency.
I mean, in talking to Mr. Loomis, we're hoping that he'll be cooperative in reviewing the compliance order and implementing sort of what we're asking him to do, provided we also have opportunities to negotiate with him on, type of restoration, how he's going to do the work, and the amount of fill removal.
A group of Skagway students will spend the next week in a place with beaches, rainforests, strong native culture, caves, and plentiful wildlife. Sounds a lot like Southeast Alaska, and that's part of why they're going there. The students are in Puerto Rico with a Smithsonian science trip. Part of their studies will be to compare and contrast the two areas.
We actually get to go to La Parguera, where at night there's enough bioluminescent plankton in the ocean that when the wind hits it, it basically looks like northern lights on the water.
Corey Thole, 7th through 12th grade science teacher at the Skagway School, is leading the trip.
It's Smithsonian student travel, and it is a branch of Smithsonian themselves, and they specialize in educational trips for high school and college and really anybody who's interested in going it. But they kind of focus on doing student groups.
The 20 local students will meet up with 9 from New York and focus their trip on studying earth science, physical science, biology, ecology, along with culture and history.
On this trip, I'm focusing it on kind of a compare and contrast between Alaska and our ecosystems compared to what they have down in Puerto Rico. So on Saturday, while we're in Juneau, we're actually going to go and visit the NOAA Fisheries Laboratory, and the kids are going to get to see what they're studying in this area and the corals that we have and the fish and the marine life that we have here. And then when we're down in Puerto Rico, we get to have a day going snorkeling, so they'll kind of get a hands-on compare and contrast experience of the marine life in Alaska compared to the marine life in Puerto Rico and the coral reefs.
Their itinerary takes them to El Yunque Rainforest, the only tropical national rainforest in the United States. San Juan, the capital, Ponce, the second largest city there, Camuy Caverns, the third largest cave system in the world, an Indian ceremonial center, and mangrove forests.
So we'll get to compare the tropical rainforest down there to our temperate rainforest. And in total, Puerto Rico is 100 miles long by 30 miles wide, and it pretty much holds every tropical ecosystem out there, with the windward side of it, the northeast being wet and the southwest being dry, and then the mountains and everything in between. So El Yunque itself has kind of 4 different forest biomes within it. So you kind of start at the lower tropical rainforest, and then as you work your way up, you get into the cloud forest and the dwarf rainforest up at the top.
The Skagway School Board decided a few years back to move away from the annual senior trips and look more into educational trips every 2 years. The first trip of this kind was also through Smithsonian to U.S. historic sites on the East Coast.
So every other year, it basically leapfrogs a history, social studies-orientated trip to a science trip. And so that basically gives everybody in the high school a chance to do both of them throughout their high school career. So it's instead of just being for the seniors, it's for 9th through 12th grade.
The Puerto Rico trip will also give some of the travelers a chance to practice the Spanish they've been learning in school. And the group will visit Spanish settlement influences from when the Spaniards colonized the island in the early 16th century.
We'll get to go to El Moro, which is a big fortress. It took over 200 years to build, starting in the 16th century. And it was basically a big fort to fight off the pirates, as it was a major stop for gold coming from South America before it headed off across the ocean.
The students and parents chose Puerto Rico from three options. The others were Florida and Grand Canyon. From there, the group has been fundraising over the last year to pay for the trip, which totals about $3,500 per student.
And what the kids are going to get asked to do is present what they learned down in Puerto Rico and why it was a worthwhile trip when they get back. So some of the kids have done their own independent research on Puerto Rico itself, but a lot of them are just excited to go down there and be surprised by everything.
The students will spend 6 nights in the Caribbean island of Puerto Rico, a territory where the record low in April is 67 degrees Fahrenheit. Reporting for KHNS, this is Tara Bicknell.